Good morning, everyone. Welcome to today's edition of AM Minnesota on Tuesday. There are going to be Veterans Day observances here in Faribault, as there have been for many, many years. I don't know if these gentlemen know when it started, the observances in Faribault. John Hessig's shaking his head. Don't ask me that question. He's the Legion Commander. Kirk Mansfield is here. And Kirk, what's your official title involved in all of this?
Well, Gordy, I'm just a knuckle dragger from way back, you know, like I don't know if I have an official title at the Legion. I am on the executive board there, but beyond that, I guess I would just be known as the past commander.
Oh, I thought you were the chaplain.
At one time I was, but Glenn Wagner, he actually fulfills that role now. He does a great job for us.
All right, fantastic.
You do fulfill the role as the commander or leader of the Rice County Central Vets.
Well, there is that. Yeah, I guess that part is.
And this would be a program that they put on.
That's right. Central Vets do this.
Yeah, I got a few titles. I guess that would be one of them. President of the Rice County Central Veterans Association.
Well, I have been in Faribault since 1987. And every year since I've been here, this observance has been held on Veterans Day. Do we know when it started?
I do not. And you're asking the wrong guy there, because I'm an Iowa transplant. Really? I didn't show up here until 1998.
Do you have an historian?
So on the auxiliary side, we do. I guess we don't on the Legion side, do we?
Wow, you don't have an historian.
That's a good question. Well, that's why I brought this pen and paper. I got stuff to write down to figure out, right? Like, we talked about the post number. I'm not even sure on that, how we got our post number.
Post number 43.
In 1919.
The same year that the Legion started.
That is correct. Yes.
So it's got to be one of the early posts in the state.
I would agree to that. But we got questions here, Gordy. I got stuff I got to write down. So we're going to we'll get this figured out.
Well, no, I just found it interesting that you don't have an historian. Yeah, no. John, when I was down to the Legion for, what was I down there for? I was for a breakfast or something, wasn't I? And I saw you.
55021
And you took me benefit. Took me into the office and showed me some historical artifacts, and that's when I assumed that you might be the historian.
I am not. I am not.
Yeah.
I can tell you that we started observing Memorial Day.
Yeah, I know that one too,
yeah. In 1869, but.
Well, it would have to be after the Armistice Day,
yep.
Which was what, 1918? I don't know. Anyway, do you want to introduce our other guests here, Kirk?
These
other gentlemen that are sitting in the studio and looking at me thinking, when are we going to talk?
Well, they'll have opportunity, and we have a 30-minute program here, fellas.
Well, actually, so, 27 minutes, yeah. Roughly.
But yeah, we are very blessed to have Mr. Roger Williams and his son Christopher Williams as our honored veterans for the program this year. Chris being my next door neighbor, he's pretty heavily involved with Post 43 American Legion, and then Roger just up the road out of Dundas, and he's with Post 43 Legion out of the Northfield side of things.
But, yeah, Post, 84?
Mm-hmm. 84, yeah. Yeah, so again, we're just honored to have them here, and I'll let them kind of run down their extensive time in service. Between the two of them, close to 60 years combined service.
Wow.
So it's pretty amazing.
That's over a half cent.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Not quite as old as I am.
Right on. So yeah, Roger and Chris, and I'll let you ask away whatever you got for them.
Well,
so.
We'll pop on them a little bit later. First of all, the observance is at the courthouse, North Lawn.
Yes, so 11 a.m., 11th hour, 11th day, 11th month,
yep.
Right? So 11 a.m. on Tuesday, that'll be the official ceremony here in Faribault, Rice County. I can't say Rice County exclusive, because you have other towns in Rice County obviously observing Veterans Day, but for Faribault, 11 a.m. at the Courthouse Memorial. And so we'll have a program up there that usually lasts anywhere from 10, 15 minutes or so. We kind of keep that a little bit truncated because we have a longer version of the program down at the Legion directly thereafter. That usually starts at noon hour or thereabouts when everybody gets gathered into the Legion for lunch. And all these events that we're describing here are free and open to the public. So, you know, if anybody wants to come out and observe Veterans Day with us as a group, you're more than welcome. So.
And John, I'm assuming you'd like people to stop by for the boots event as well. You want to give us some details about that, John?
We would. On the 10th, we will start setting up just prior to noon. Noon is the official kickoff of the event. And so we set up a line of boots up on the courthouse steps. And at the bottom of every hour, starting at 12:30 with the first set of military boots, at the bottom of every hour, because these people were at the bottom of their life when they, or bottom of their, yeah, well, their life, bottom of their life when they took their own life. And all these boots that we have this year have a picture and a biography of every person that we're commemorating there. And all of those people have a close, direct tie to Faribault, or if anything, more than one away. Like, we have people that work with us with Operation 23 to Zero out of Waseca. And that gentleman will be coming over here and laying a set of boots of one of his soldiers who suicided. And so we have direct connection, not more than one person away, for all 23 sets of those boots. This year we're going to do something a little different to kick the program off. We're also going to be setting a set of boots down for the officer that suicided over in Farmington. And that's going to be the first set of boots we put down. We're going to put that set of boots down at noon, because we're not raising awareness just for veteran suicide. We're raising awareness for suicide in general. Veteran suicide just happens to be a big role of this because it's so high. So we'll start that at noon on Monday, November 10th, and we'll go right up. The last set of boots goes down at 10:30, just before the Veterans Day program starts, and then we'll roll right into the Veterans Day program from there. And so, we'll be there all night, 24 hours. Come on down. Come and see us. Ask questions. Talk. Reminisce. A lot of war stories come out down there. People come down and tell their war stories.
So people do speak at this event, the boots event?
For every set of boots we put down, we do a...
bio?
We don't read the bio, but we talk a little bit about the person. We do a Bible verse reading and then a final salute for that person. When the family members are there, because a lot of the family members come down and set these boots, and when they're there and they come down and set the boots down, they do the reading, we do the final salute for them, and then they stand around for sometimes hours and talk about their family member and how they lost them and how it's affected them and stuff like that. And other people going through the same thing, that's some of the stories they need to hear. They need to know. I mean, what works for you may not work for me, but it might work for someone else. They need to know that stuff. So as far as an official speech on each person, no. We know them, so we read a little bit about them, and then the Bible verse and final salute.
Is that 23 number still accurate?
Close. it's actually 19 now, so it's a little bit lower when you take active duty suicide and veteran suicide, where the active duty suicide is 1.4 service members each day, and the veteran suicide is 17.6. So we're right at that 19 number. So it has gone down. And those numbers are from 2023, because we're 2 years behind on getting our numbers. They come out in March of every year. So in March...
Explain that to me, please. We have computers and we can't get numbers newer than 2 years.
Well, and I'll be the first one to tell you that I think these numbers are somewhat skewed, because those numbers that we're reporting for military and veteran suicide are people who are registered in the VA system. All active duty people are registered in the VA system, but not all veterans are registered in the VA system.
That's correct.
I mean, I know of one person for sure, local here, that's not registered in the VA system.
So do you have to personally register?
You do. You do. And it's
not automatic.
Nope. It's a 40-minute thing to go up there to the VA hospital or fill out the paperwork. And
why couldn't you make it automatic?
Same reason they don't make it automatic that you register in your county. When you get out of the military, you should take a copy of DD-214 to your county and register that copy with your county. And people just don't do it. They don't feel they have a need for it. When you register in the VA system, they think they're registering for VA healthcare. They're not registering. They're registering for the opportunity to be able to use VA healthcare, but they're registering just to get their name and everything in the VA system. And there are people out there that just haven't taken the time. You know, you're talking about a 30 or 40 minute stop at the VA hospital to do that. You can actually fill out the form and turn it in from your house. You don't have to do it. You can download the form online.
So if I'm not registered, do I not receive, you know, when you pass away, if you're a veteran, you get some benefits?
Sometimes.
Like burial at Fort Snelling or a veteran's cemetery. If you're not registered, would you not be allowed to do that?
So with the VCA, the Veterans Cemetery Administration, all you have to do is request that and turn in a copy of your DD-214, of the Veterans DD-214, and you get that benefit. As far as getting a monetary benefit for the burial benefit, the non-service connected benefit, which is like $1,002 starting January, and plot allowance, and service-connected burial allowance. To get those things, you have to be registered in the VA system. You had to have been drawing a monetary monthly benefit from the VA in order to be entitled to that burial benefit.
Okay, because my dad was a DAV, received money every month. Being a DAV, he would have qualified for this.
Yes, correct. Correct, and he would have been enrolled in the,
VA system. I don't think my mom knew that. Not that it matters, but I mean, he earned that, right? Yes. Serving in World War II.
And there's no time limit. If he died from a service-connected problem, there's no time limit for a service-connected death. For non-service-connected death, it's a two-year time limit.
Okay.
You have to apply within 2 years.
So, Roger Williams.
Yes, sir.
Tell me about your service to our great nation.
Well, I was one of those that joined the military and the reserve component. I joined the Minnesota Army National Guard in 1963, and I was involved in a lot of activities, and finally, after a couple of years, I started working full-time for them. So I was working during the week as a combination of things that varied through the years from civilian to actually military status. So, but with that, I was also able to go to the schools and get the promotions that I needed, and I was fortunate enough to have worked in quite a few different areas. I started out in the training business. I was a training officer for the engineer battalion, and then I was able to move on into administration. And then later on, I was did some administration of some supply work. So I kind of covered the whole realm. And I was able to spend my whole career. We were one of the strange things of the reserve components. Everybody thinks that they're always activated every time there's a necessary, and it normally was. We came very close during Vietnam to being mobilized, but the system worked out and we didn't. So we were never mobilized for active duty, federal active duty, during the entire 37 years that I was in
the Guard. Oh, my word, 37 years.
And so when I turned 60, of course, it's mandatory retirement. I had to get out then, and that was a few years ago already. But as far as being with the active duty system, not going on active duty like we were, a lot of people asked that question, and that was a reason. I had a couple of active duty with the state. We had a flood down in Mankato, and we had to go down and build dikes down there, and I was just getting started, so I was driving the old Army dump trucks that they had, and it was quite an experience. And then we were also mobilized when they had the riot up on Plymouth Avenue in a few years after that. We were on active duty up there, so that's my active. When people ask the question, where did you go? Where were you mobilized? That I share that in
Minneapolis,
the way it was. So, but I appreciated that being able to be full-time as well as in the reserve component.
Do you remember what year the flood was, Mankato?
I was going to have numbers, but I don't have it in front of me.
No, that's okay. Well, I'm thinking there was a lot of flooding in 65.
It would have been probably, that's probably the main one. We built a dike over in North Mankato, and it was one of those so I think it was 60, it would have been 65 or 6, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because I went all the way up the Minnesota River then. They had floods in the different areas up there. But some of the guys, I stayed at Mankato, but I just drove the truck. That was my early on job, so that was kind of interesting. So,
isn't that interesting? Christopher, tell me about your service.
Well, I joined the...
You didn't fall too far from the tree, obviously.
No, you kind of have to.
You were nudged along, huh?
Well, I was young, but I didn't even tell him I was thinking about it until the recruiter caught me at high school one time, and I went down and took the ASFAB at Mankato and came back and said, yeah, okay, I'll sign. And then I called Dad in 1985 and said, you want to come swear me in? Because I just joined the National Guard. And he said, okay, I'll be right in.
You were proud as a peacock, weren't you?
It was the biggest surprise of my life. He said I thought he was down at the Armory for some other event or something was going on. And really, we never did discuss it, it was kind of in that situation. I didn't want to influence him either way. And
oh, you didn't ever encourage him to do it?
No, I did not. He knew what I was doing, and
I just helped him pack a lot for summer camps and stuff, and kind of thought, when do I get a footlocker? And so then I put in 21 years at Northfield.
You went overseas.
And I went. At 18 years, start over. I can go back to high school, started out as a parts clerk in the Northfield Armory. Then I went to college. I ended up doing ROTC, got my commission. And once I got commissioned, my goal was kind of that I never wanted to leave the Northfield unit. I wanted to at least get 20 years or until they told me I had to get out if I didn't continue my officer training. So at 18 years, I resigned, went back into maintenance section and became a mechanic. But prior to that, I had been just about every platoon leader slot I had filled, and we'd also picked up a detachment over in Red Wing, and at one time I was even detachment commander over there. So at 18 years, we got notified that we were getting mobilized, and as I had mentioned to you earlier, I think at the time we were kind of the guinea pigs for the Red Bull Division, but we married up with a Kansas unit, went to Iraq. We were stationed in Kuwait. We were there for a year, and we drove heavy equipment transport, which is the biggest truck the Army had. And I kind of thought at the time, little old me gets to drive the biggest truck in the world? This is cool. So,
and you had to upkeep them too, because you were a mechanic.
Well, we did that. We did a lot more driving. We did work on them as need be for our services that we needed to do. And you had to fix them on the road if something broke. So we had knowledge of that as well, and a good crew over there to get us what we needed, and we could fix them pretty easily. But after 21 years and got home from Iraq, I said, okay, I think I'm done. So,
all right, we're going to take our opening market break here. A service of your KDHL Agri Boosters. This is the Linder Market Report and Analysis.
AM Minnesota on the Mighty 920 KDHL.
Good morning. It's time for the market update on this Friday morning here on the Linder Farm Network with Jim Emter, Van Auning Company, Alexandria. Well, Jim, corn just near unchanged. Bean futures after that lower day yesterday, higher this morning. What's giving the market support?
Yeah, Linda, a lot of chop here in these markets. As we've talked about it, you've got your key supports, you got your resistance in the soybean market getting closer to that $11 mark. Wants to, you know, try to move away from it here, just like we moved away from this 1140, you know, 1138 area here when we got up to that. So we're kind of consolidating a range here a little bit up near the top end of this chart. We've had a nice rally in soybeans, and I just think the next move is extremely important because you break out above that, you know, you've got 1160 and 1205 price counts to accelerate us to the top side. If we can't hold $11, that's problematic. And then you start to look at price counts down to 1070 and possibly 1020 again, where our prior supports and resistance really were for the bean market. So pretty important trade here ahead. I think expectations next week are for yields to drop out of Friday's crop report. We should have some trade estimates as we come into Tuesday. So that'll bring some more transparency because some of these privates that we've seen so far have been a little on the large side in regards to their yield expectations from my vantage point. on the corn market here. This is a market that we couldn't get above 435, so now we got to come down and test 429. We're trying to hold 429 down, made it down to 427, which is actually the bigger number for me, but we try to move up when the market's moving up. So again, you know, this is a market we get below 427 to 429, that's problematic. Maybe a retest of 417. If we can get above 435, then I think 443 to 447. But one thing about corn, I think we're a little more defined on that range here at this point. You know, I do expect some demand to decrease here in the feed use sector on Friday's report next week, and the yields may pull back, but not to the degree soybeans from our vantage point.
And meanwhile, volatility in the livestock markets, the cattle and the feeder cattle today, looking at the triple digits higher. What's happening?
Oh, yeah, Linda, we don't mess around. I mean, when the cattle market takes direction in the morning, it's moving and it's going to move big anymore, it feels like. And again, we found some support. We're at fourth price counts. We're near the 200-day moving average. Linda, this is where we need to step up, or else we're kind of in the very rare markets. And I don't know that we need to be in cattle. Yes, you know, prices need to come down, and they have. Let's see if we can get some stability. And I think that's what the cattle market's really in for. Now, we do tend to get some seasonal pressure, so we'll need to watch that as we work ahead. Hogs, on the other hand, that's a market that needs to get back above 80 or else. This is not a good-looking chart right now. Let's see if we can get support and get back over that 80 mark on that December hogs.
Thank you, Jim. Jim Emter, Van On & Company, Alexandria. Chicago December corn, December corn now at 428 and a half, down a quarter of a cent. March is at 443, unchanged. November beans 11 and a half a cent, up 8 3/4. January 11.14 and a half, up 7 cents. December Chicago wheat down 4 3/4. Live cattle December 221.87, up 3.10. November feeder cattle 327.30, up 5.25. December lean hogs 79.30, up 32. February down 10. The Dow down 138. This is the Linder Farm Network.
International Ag Labs wants to boost your soil's productivity with Z-Hume. Recognized for its powerful residue decomposing abilities, Z-Hume uses bacteria to accelerate humus formation, storing nitrogen and minerals for steady plant growth. It also reestablishes microbial activity when applied with starter fertilizer and can even be used in pig pits to help break solids down, improve fly control, and enhance manure quality. Don't forget to ask International Ag Labs about their specialized garden blends, where you can create your own fertilizer mix. Visit aglabs.com for more info. Trust Z-Hume.
Winkert Land Services has several auctions coming up. On November 10th, the 416 plus acre auction in Big Stone County. On November 13th, 80 acres in Faribault County and almost 200 acres also in Faribault County. And on November 14th, 120 plus acres in Redwood County. For more information on these auctions, go to wingertlandservices.com or call 507-248-5263. 5263. That's our market update on the Linder Farm Network.
Now, we certainly do appreciate that. We only have this show is some days is just not long enough, and today's one of them. I could go a whole hour listening to these stories from these gentlemen, Roger Williams and Christopher Williams. Yes, they are related. Mm-hmm. Father, son, are in studio. They are the, what's the official title? Honored Veterans?
Honored Veterans. You got it. Yeah.
And, of course, we honor all veterans on Veterans Day.
We do. Yeah, absolutely. I think that day has been set aside for exactly that purpose, just to let our veteran population know that we appreciate the sacrifice they've made and certainly the sacrifice on behalf of their families over a multi-year period in some cases. A lot of these younger troops, and doesn't matter the age, I guess, but a lot of these veterans have deployed numerous times into and around the globe, in and out of combat. We have National Guard units that are serving now that have probably 5, 6, 7, 8 plus deployments into a combat zone.
Yeah, that's the difference from over the years, right? In Vietnam, you went over, you might have done a year or two tour, come back, you didn't have 5 or 6 different tours typically, right?
Yeah, I think John could probably speak a little more to that effect in terms of you know, the cohort that has deployed, but I think you're right. Like, typically in Vietnam, I can't say for certain, but I believe the average deployment was a year long, you know, depending on your MOS, typical. You know, and a lot of the ones that went to Vietnam, they didn't go as a unit. You know, they would piecemeal in and out as singles. Maybe some of them would go as a partial unit, but my understanding is a lot of them just went individually or maybe with just a few others from their unit. Whereas current day, and again, I can't speak 100%, but my understanding, Iraq, Afghanistan typically would deploy with their entire unit, you know, and I don't know if you guys have any input on that. Is that fairly accurate?
Real accurate. I mean, it was all piecemeal in World War II, the Korean War, Vietnam War. It was piecemeal. They replaced people as they needed to be replaced,
right,
whether it was due to death in field or whether it was their time when there was done and they came back. Mm-hmm. And then they were replaced by somebody else. Hot bunking, for lack of better terms, the same bunks, same units were there the whole time. You just got assigned to that unit, and now you're sleeping in some other guy's rack. Now, when the National Guard goes, there was at one point in time during the Gulf War that it was 68% of the forces fighting were National Guard and Reserve forces.
Well, we had piecemealed a few too, because. Yeah. We also had people from Guam, Kansas, and Minnesota were all lumped together during our deployment.
You still keep in touch with some of those folks?
We've kept in touch with a few people in Kansas. We found out that they had a little reunion here on their own. I believe that was 2 weeks ago. They sounded like they got about 30 people. Normally, we took 100, they took 100, but we also had a reunion last February, and we had about 60 of our people show up for that, which was really cool.
Roger, you still keep in touch with folks?
I try to keep track of a lot of them. I was fortunate enough to have been in different locations. I was in the old Minneapolis Armories where I started, and so we had to...
They used to have Laker games in that old Minneapolis. My dad told me about that.
And so I started there, and then I went over to the division headquarters in St. Paul. Then they built a new armory out in Bloomington, and I was out there. So I was located in those three different places and belonged to several different units during that time.
He knew quite a few people in the system.
And it's of course our place where we did a lot of the field training and everything was up at Camp Ripley, and that had a fairly large crew up there, and I was in all the different areas of the management, why I got to know quite a few. So, and I talked to them as recently as very recently. We'll just leave it at that.
Okay, fine. John, how did the event go on Sunday, your first of the... Every Sunday there's an event going on, this grief support group?
Yeah. Actually, she was at the lady that held that was at the meeting last night with us, and she said that it was attended well, and it went over very well.
Cool.
And she's looking forward to continuing them every Sunday up there at the Bethel Ridge Church at 6 o'clock at night on Sundays this month.
Kirk, when did these start, the 023 event up at the courthouse? Was that several years ago, right?
Right. So what we've got coming up here starting on Monday at noon that John was speaking about at the beginning of the program here, this will be our 9th annual.
Okay.
And so starting at noon, like you said, on the 10th, and then we'll run 23 straight hours right up to the beginning of the program on the 11th. But this will be our 9th annual overnight, 23 straight hours. We're going to be on the line up there, play some boots every hour at the bottom of the hour. And by design, like we talked, when someone's about to take their life, they're at the bottom of their life. So that's why we chose the bottom of the hour for exactly that reason.
And I don't know if you heard the show last Friday, and John and Jane did a great job on the program talking about, grief support and suicide prevention. And really, one life is too many to lose.
Yeah, it's tough. And we're trying to stem that, get these numbers down. But
you had the NFL player just this.
Mm-hmm. I just heard that this morning on the radio.
Yeah, a couple horrible. Of days ago, he took his life.
Yep. You know, all of these are, if we can get to them in time, we can help, you know. But a lot of people are just too proud to ask for help, and they're trying to break that stigma.
Well.
It's okay. It's okay to ask for help.
Yeah. I can kind of relate to that, to be quite honest with you. Mm-hmm. You know, I really can. Well, we've only got seconds left of the show. Roger, I appreciate your stopping by. You live in Dundas?
Yeah, rural Dundas. I live out west of Dundas, and 2 years now, we've had a blacktop road in front of our
house. Wow, isn't that awesome?
Little old township road became a county road, so
that concludes today's AM Minnesota. Hope to see you.